Thank you for sitting in the front. Okay. Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahanau Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karavavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastu Mavidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Welcome everyone. Welcome also to those who watch the class online later. Are you able to hear me okay at the back? I have to still figure out the volume thingy. Maybe in a couple of classes I will. Kakhalu nalang kriyate, kakhalu nalang kriyate, drishta drishtartha sadhana patiyan, drishta drishtartha sadhana patiyan, amuya kanthasthitaya, amuya kanthasthitaya, prashnotararatnamalikaya, prashnotararatnamalikaya. Kutra visham, dushta jane, kimiha ashaucham bhavet, kimiha ashaucham bhavet, runam runam, runam runam, kim abhayam, vairagyam, bhayam apikim, vit. Vittameva sarvesham, kadurlabhanaranam, hari bhaktihi, patakanchakim, himsa, kohi bhagavat priyasyat, Kohi Bhagavat Priyasyat Yonyam no dvejaye danudviknaha Yonyam no dveje dviknaha. So we ended here in the last class. Who is Kaha Bhagavat Priyaha? Who is dear to the Lord? And the answer was the one who does not Udvejayet, who does not disturb others, who does not cause harm to others, and who is anudvignaha, who himself or herself is not disturbed or perturbed. And we elaborated a little bit on why ahimsa is, in Hindu you've heard the ahimsa paramo dharma, why ahimsa. So I may have not clarified enough in the last class for those of you who may not know this. So ahimsa is harm or cruelty. Ahimsa we would normally translate as non-harm or non-cruelty. That a prefix in Sanskrit has six different meanings. There are six different ways you can use that a prefix. And in this case, when you say ahimsa, it does not mean absence of harm. In a way it means absence of harm, but in a way it also doesn't. So for example, we take up eating, and also wanted to point out, last week I mentioned a vegetarian diet. There is no, in the scriptures, there is no non-vegetarian diet. Food means it's vegetarian. But tell me, when we eat a plant, when we eat vegetables or vegetarian food, are we causing harm to the plants?
Some.
Right? We are causing some harm. So ahimsa does not mean no harm. It means least harm. And least harm not only to the other, other meaning other person, nature, plants, animals, but also it involves ourselves. We need to Ahimsa is doing what causes least harm to everyone involved in every situation, everyone and everything involved. So we saw some nuances of ahimsa in the last class and why ahimsa is the best, highest dharma. Ahimsa is the highest form of self-controlled dhamma. Ahimsa is the best friend. Ahimsa was the best practice, because this is something you have to do 24/7. It's not that you practice ahimsa maybe only while eating a meal, because you're eating vegetarian food. Whether you're in this room or you step out and sit in your car and drive, how about when you're an aggressive driver? That is himsa to some extent. So ahimsa needs to really carry through our lives in every action we do, in every word we say, in every word we speak, in every thought we think. If you're thinking a bad thought, you might be thinking, oh, nobody's really knowing what I'm thinking. Except, you know, most spouses, after many years, decades of living together, they might know what the other person is kind of thinking, especially when there is an argument coming or a difficult situation coming, and the one spouse will say, you always do this, you're always thinking like this. That's not what they're saying. So in every action we do, in every word we say, and every thought we think, we have to be developing this practice of ahimsa. Even if the other person doesn't know what we are thinking, if it's a negative thought, we are thinking it. So remember, ahimsa involves not only everybody else, but ourselves as well. So if you have a negative thought, who is it affecting? If you have a negative thought and you're not acting verbally or physically on that negative thought, who is that negative thought affecting the most? Ourselves, right? So that's really the sensitivity required to be vigilant, to be constantly careful, constantly mindful about how our thinking is, how our words are, and how our action is. And it's a very, very important practice that it's one practice that will help us grow spiritually leaps and bounds. Because we are questioning every thought, every word, and every action we think, say, or do. What better spiritual practice is there for growth? I mean, there are other practices, but this is being self-aware is a very important, very good practice. Kasmat siddhihi, tapasaha, buddhikvanu, bhusure. So kasmat siddhihi, siddhi means success. So where is success from? How do we become successful? Both in a worldly sense and in a spiritual sense. Tapasaha, from tapas. Tapas, in the religious sense, it's usually translated as austerity, which, you know, most people will take tapas to mean fasting or keeping maunam, keeping silent for a day. Here we can take it as a committed pursuit or a disciplined effort, disciplined commitment, along with devotion. So if you have a disciplined commitment, if you work really hard and you work very diligently, is success guaranteed? Is success guaranteed? If you work really hard, very diligent, no, because there is a factor beyond us that also comes into play. So here we can take tapas as committed pursuit along with devotion, and we saw in last class the Ishvara Arpana Buddhi, the attitude that anything I do is an offering to Ishvara. Any result I get is a prasada from Ishvara. So when we have that mindset, if you work really hard and diligently and you're not successful in the project, you're okay. Because you understand that this additional Ishvara grace from Ishvara is a big factor in how successful we are, whether it's in our worldly life or in spiritual growth. There is a sutra from Patanjali's Yoga Sutra, which explains how tapas works. And it says, Kayendriya Siddhihi Ashuddhi Kshayat Tapasaha. Tapasaha, from the practice of tapas, discipline or austerity, Ashuddhi Kshayat. Kshaya means to decay. So due to the destruction, the weakening of the Ashuddhi, the impurities, Kaya Indriya Siddhihi, the success that we get because of Kaya using our physical organs, or Indriya using our subtle organs like the mind and the senses, Siddhihi, we get Siddhi. So Siddhi comes because of tapas, because of this disciplined effort of our body, mind and senses, along with Ishvara Anugraha, along with grace from Ishvara. And what are these austerities, what are these practices of the kaya, of the mind, body and senses that we need to practice, we need to focus on? And Bhagavad Gita in chapter 17 lists several disciplines of the body. Shariram tapas, Deva Dvija, we saw this in a prior class, I'm just going to remind you about it. So Pujanam, Puja, of who? Deva Dvija, Guru and Prajnas, of the deities, the Guru and the Brahmanas. Shaucham, Arjavam, Shaucham, cleanliness. So this is disciplines at the physical level, disciplines of the body. So obviously, Shaucham, cleanliness of a body, physical body is important. Archavam, straightforwardness, uprightness. Brahmacharyam, ahimsa. Brahmacharyam can be here taken as celibacy. Of course, that doesn't apply to grihastashrama. And ahimsa. Ahimsa comes again. So disciplining of the physical body to not perform himsa is a shariram tapas. Shariram tapa uchyate. These are said to be tapas of the body. And then the next verse talks about vak tapas, tapas of the speech, which includes all the senses. Anudvegakaram vakyam satyam priyahitam chayate. We've heard these words a few times in this classes already. Vakyam, speech, that do not anudvegakaram, do not cause agitation, do not disturb. Satyam, truthful, priyahitam, which are pleasing and which are beneficial. These studies, and along with swadhyayam, swadhyaya and abhyasanam, along with all the spiritual practices, scriptural practices like puja, meditation, and the study of scriptures, eva vangmayam tapa uchyate. These are called the tapas, the disciplines of the senses. In this verse, it is specifically referring to the speech. And then, what about manasa tapas? Mana prasadaha, pleasantness of the mind, a peaceful mind, not being constantly stressed. You know, we forget how sometimes we don't even realize how stressed we are at the mental level, at an emotional level. We know stress of the body. Sometimes you feel the body tight, you feel like an arm is sore. But how about the mind? How often are we aware when stress is affecting our mind? And when that stress is in the mind, it's going to manifest as physical harm, physical himsa or vak. So when you're stressed, and I have noticed this for myself, if I'm stressed and I'm driving on the road, I am more irritable. I don't use curse words, but I'm like talking to myself in the car. Why is he cutting me? Why is that person? I don't know if any of you feel that, but I'm aware when there is some kind of mental stress, it's coming out in, and I'm driving more, I shouldn't say erratically, but my driving becomes more unpleasant. So to recognize when the mental stress is manifest in as a physical stress or as a stress of the senses is important to know. So the next verse in the Gita talks about manasa tapas. We saw that. Maunam, atma vinigraha. Maunam, silence. Atma vinigraha, self-control really. Bhava samshuddhi iti etat tapaha, bhava samshuddhi, purity of intent. What is our attitude towards anything we do? Is it because you say, oh my gosh, I have to do this, so you're doing it with that kind of an attitude? You don't want to do something, but you have to do it. The good thing is at least you're doing it. But we can learn to shift our attitude or be aware at least of what attitude we are doing it with. Manasam uchyate. These are called mental tapas or penance. And one of the best ways, two of the best ways to incorporate both this kayika tapas, the physical austerities, vak tapas and manasa tapas into our lives is by puja and meditation. A daily practice of puja and meditation helps us cultivate all these three aspects so that we become, one, more aware of what is going on in our own bodies and mind, and two, how that comes out in our interaction with others. The second half of this verse, nukva, now, where meaning in what place, buddhihi, where is intelligence found? And the answer is bhusure, in the bhusura. Now who is a bhusura? I hadn't heard this word before, so I had to look it up. Bhusura literally, sura means a god and bhu means the earth. So literally it means earth god. But this is a name for a brahmana. And a brahmana who is considered to be a dharmic person. One, a brahmana who performs ritual, who teaches the Vedas. Such a person, intelligence, buddhi, is found in such a person. So does this mean that if you are not a bhusura, you're not a brahmana, for I think most of us in this room would qualify to fit in that category, does this mean we're not intelligent? Intelligence is not found? Obviously not. This, you have to look at it in the context of when this text was written. But something you may not know, in the scriptures, it talk about jati brahmana and guna brahmana. Jati brahmana is somebody who is a brahmana by birth. You've heard of the four varnashrama system, the brahmanas, kshatriyas, vaishyas, and the shudras. So somebody who is born into a brahmana family was considered to be a jati brahmana. Whereas a guna brahmana is one who may not be born into a brahmana family, but whose nature, whose qualities, whose tendencies are that of a brahmana. And there is a very a nice story in the Puranas, which in the Chandogya Upanishad, there is the story of Satyakama Jabala. I don't know if any of you have heard of that. So this Satyakama was a young boy who was very eager to study the Vedas. And in those days, the Vedas, and even today, you know, the more orthodox teachers, you would learn Vedas only if you were a jati brahmana, if you were born in a brahmana family, and if you were male, so which disqualifies more than half the crowd here. So he goes, he wants to learn Vedas, and he goes to the Rishi and asks, before going to the Rishi, he needs to know what his gotra is. Gotra is a way to know, lineage, a way to know what kind of family, what kind of lineage you belong to. So he goes to his mother, Jabala, and asks her for the gotra. Imagine this 5 or 7 year old boy asking the mother for the jati, what lineage they belong to. The mother, unfortunately, didn't know who the father was. And yes, this happened in ancient times as well, not only in modern movies that we see. So she tells Satyakama, I don't know what gotra, what your lineage is. So the Satyakama goes to the the guru, sage Gautama, and repeats exactly what his mother tells him. In all likelihood, he would not be taken as a disciple because he doesn't know his lineage. But surprisingly, the rishi tells him that only a true brahmana could say this, could repeat this truth and share this truth. So even if you were not born, not a jati brahmana, not born in a brahmana family, I will take you as my student. So he gets initiated. And why is this story important? Because it values truth. The value of truth overrides what birth lineage we have. Truth is a guna, or was considered a guna. So in ancient times, it was not that only the brahmanas were truthful, but only the brahmanas were required to be truthful. Everybody is required to be truthful, but the brahmanas were given a little bit more importance because they were teaching the Vedas and they were doing the rituals, so they were expected to be truthful. So why is this? The quality of truth was considered more important than that of birth. And in Bhagavad Gita, in the 18th chapter, the duties and the nature of a brahmana are defined by Lord Krishna based on the guna and the karma, the actions that we perform. And it says, shama, dama, tapas, shaucham, kshantihi, arjavam, evacha. So shamaha means serenity or peace. Dama, we've seen before, self-control, restraint over our external, over our sense organs. Tapas, we saw tapas, austerity, a disciplined living. Shaucham, purity, we just saw earlier, purity of the mind, of the body, senses and mind, internal and external. Kshantihi is forbearance, forgiveness, tolerance. Arjavam, we just saw that a little while back, uprightness. Uprightness, you could translate as honesty, not being hypocritical. I think I mentioned in an earlier class, alignment of, and this work definition I like very much, alignment of thought, speech, and actions. And if you are, that is straightforwardness, that is arjavam. Jnanam, vijnanam, astikyam. So jnanam, knowledge or study. Vijnanam, understanding the scriptures. And or astikyam, faith in the Vedas. Swabhavajam, brahma karma swabhavajam. These actions, all these characteristics are swabhavajam, are born of one's nature. And these are brahma karma, these are the actions, said to be the actions of a brahmana. So we can understand why truth is such an important value, that it overrides what lineage you were born into. Kuto buddhihi vruddhopasevaya ke vriddhaha, ke vriddhaha, ye dharma tatvajnyaha. So kutaha, from where or how, is buddhihi, intelligence gain. How do wise people develop their buddhi? And the answer, you know, you would think is, okay, study more scriptures, do more... nowadays, who does scriptures? Look at more AI tools for getting answers to everything. So the answer here is vriddha upasevaya. Upaseva, we saw this in an earlier class, is service or association with vriddhaha, with wise. Vriddha doesn't mean old, age-wise old. It means wise people following their guidance. And we saw this in our last class as well. The Council of Elders, last class or the prior class, I don't remember. The Council of Elders associating with people who have gained wisdom because of their own life experiences. So vriddha upasevaya, associating with wise people, with elders. And we saw in the context of social gatherings, if you haven't invited elderly people to your social gatherings, summer starting soon, start inviting them. Because that's how what will happen? You'll gain intelligence. You will become wiser. And it also asks, ke vriddhaha, who are the wise people? Ye dharma tatvagnyaha. So tatvagnyaha, those who know what? Tatvam, the truth of dharma. Meaning those who know, those who have viveka, those who have discernment, they know the right from wrong, dharma from adharma. Now, why is this so important? There is a Subhashita which describes this. It's a beautiful Subhashita that I really like this. It says, Vastram antargatam yadvat vasyate vasa samshrayat yadvat. Just like vastram, a piece of cloth, vasyate becomes fragrant, becomes perfumed. Vasa samshrayat, when it is in close association with vasa, with fragrance, tatha, in the same way, samsargajaha, doshaha gunaha cha eva bhavantihi, tatha, in the same way, so too, doshaha, meaning our vices, cha and gunaha, our virtues, bhavanti, they arise in a person, how? Samsargajaha, in association with whoever you're sitting with. So if you've noticed, if you're sitting in a room where there is an agarbatti or a fragrance stick lighted, of course in a smaller room, when you leave the room, that fragrance goes along with you. It's in your clothes, it's in your, you carry it with you. You smell like that fragrance even after leaving that room. Similarly, quote unquote, the fragrance of a wise person, of a dharma tattva gnyaha, rubs off or clings to us when we associate with such a person. Unfortunately, if you associate with durjanaha, with adharmic people, what happens? I wouldn't call that fragrance. Their stink or their stench rubs along, comes along with us if we continue our association with adharmic people, those whose traits have negative tendencies, those who have negative tendencies. So we need to be very vigilant, and going back to satsanga, importance of satsanga, and this metaphor, the Subhashita, really hits at home. You know, the agarbatti metaphor. You carry it along with you. When you carry that fragrance along with you, if you come out of a room where an incense stick is burning, and you have that fragrance in your clothes, on your person, and you go and hug somebody, what happens? That fragrance gets transferred to the other person. Maybe a little bit less, but the other person smells it and has that fragrance too. Of course, I'm not suggesting go and hug everyone after you do finish a satsanga. They may or may not. Obviously, you need to know who to hug or, you know, when it is appropriate. But that fragrance that you carry along as you come out of a satsanga, you can spread that fragrance to everybody else in your life as well. So the importance of satsanga and association with vriddhaha, those who are who have viveka, is very important. sambhavitasya maranat adhikam kim samb duryasho bhavati loke sukhi bhavet kaha dhanavan dhanavan. So sambhavitasya, for somebody who is respectable, who is considered honorable, who is an esteemed person, kim adhikam, what is more painful than what? Maranat, than even death. So what is more painful for somebody who is well respected? What is more painful than death? And the answer is bhavati, becoming or gaining what? Duryashas. Duryashaha, duryashas is ill fame or repute. In for those of you who studied Bhagavad Gita, in the very beginning of chapter one and some of chapter two, when Arjuna, this great mighty warrior, is having a breakdown, mental, emotional meltdown, seeing all his loved ones on the other side of the battlefield, and not wanting to fight this war, Lord Krishna tries to motivate him to fight the war. And one of the things he says is, what will people say? He tells Arjuna that you will gain ill repute, you will become infamous if you don't fight this war, if you back off at this time. And infamy is worse than death. So why is infamy considered to be worse than death? We may not think about it, but in many cultures, death is, you know, most of us know, death is considered to be finite, meaning once you die, you're dead. It's kind of obvious. Once you die, you're dead. But what happens with infamy? If you are a very esteemed, honorable person in society, and then you commit some heinous act that brings your reputation down, and then you die. When you die, when people talk, I think people are very polite and nice. Obviously, at a memorial service, nobody is going to talk ill of the dead person. But when you, after several months or years, or even in the newspapers, when this person's name comes up, are his or her good actions usually remembered or brought up? Probably not. Most likely, it's the action or the crime that person committed that is what is remembered. And we see many examples in our lifetime and prior in politics with presidents like Richard Nixon and Bill Clinton, and more recently people like Bernie Madoff or Elizabeth Holmes. These were all people who did a lot of, who thought they were doing a lot of good, but when you think of them, when they are mentioned, only what wrong they did is usually brought up. So anytime we hear these names, we don't even think of anything good they did. That's why maranat adhikam, what is more painful than death, is this disgrace or infamy. Lives on for the person after the person dies, but many times, even the family. If you say you're a son of Jack the Ripper, or who's the serial killer, I don't know if they had children, but even the family gets that stink, gets that stain, that infamy attached to their name. Second half, kaha sukhi bhavet, who is happy? Loke, in this world, who is considered to be happy? And the answer is surprising. The answer says dhanavan, the one who has wealth. And we've seen before, wealth can make you happy very momentarily. The wealth is earning wealth is a very legitimate purushartha, gaining artha, gaining wealth. So the answer seems to be contradictory. Is a wealthy person happy? Here what the verse is implying is that for one who does not have viveka, one who does not have this discernment with, between dharma and adharma, what is real and unreal, what ends up happening is for the majority of their life, they are pursuing wealth. They are pursuing artha wealth, thinking that that is going to make them happy. Wealth, undeniably, wealth can make our lives comfortable. Wealth can make our life happy momentarily. But no amount of wealth is going to give us permanent happiness. So what happens for somebody who pursues, who thinks that being wealthy gives happiness? They pursue artha, this one of the four purusharthas, till the end of their lives, ignoring the most important of the four purusharthas, ignoring moksha, that by pursuing which, that by which, all the wealth is already gained. There is nothing more you need to do to gain that wealth. And pursuing moksha gives that everlasting happiness. It is the only source of permanent peace and contentment. Moksha is not wealth. I don't know if any of you, you know, have been around people who have... who are towards the end of their life, who may be caretaker for somebody towards the end part of their life. Have you heard anybody say towards the end of their life, I wish I had earned more wealth. I wish I had worked more so that I would have earned more wealth. Obviously not. So if they are saying that, you know, it's a shame because they've spent their whole life, a gift that we've been given, pursuing the wrong thing, pursuing something that is so impermanent like wealth. And we saw we can't take that wealth anywhere with us anyways, right? Dhanam apichakim yatascheshtam. So chakim, and further chakim api, what is dhanam? What is wealth? What is true wealth? We saw in an earlier class symbolism of Ashtalakshmi, different eight forms of wealth. Here the verse is saying, yataha, that which is ishtam, that which is fulfills desires, fulfills wants, but again, not in the sense that we think if you have money, all your desires are going to be fulfilled. I think most of us are mature enough or have learned the hard way that you can have a lot of money and still be miserable. So here what is ishtam, what is desired, it's what is wealth? Wealth is that which makes us purnam, that makes us complete and whole, that is considered to be true wealth, that by which we recognize our non-separateness, our inner divinity, non-separateness from Brahman, from Ishvara, that which is the source of permanent happiness, permanent joy, ananda, that is true wealth. True wealth is that by which all our binding desires become non-binding desires. So even if they are fulfilled or not fulfilled, we are purnam, we are complete. And how do we get there? With these teachings, with the scriptures, guided by a guru, guided, explained by a guru, by a competent teacher, we can gain this inner wealth to make us purnam, to make us wealthy, to make us so wealthy with the wealth that really matters. Sarva sukhanam bijam kim punyam punyam dukham api kutaha papat papa. So kim bijam, what is the seed, what is the source? Sarva sukhanam, for all happiness. Of course, the ultimate source is being liberated, gaining that moksha, But here it's going at a little one step above. So it says all the source for all happiness is punyam. Punyam means merit, spiritual merit. How do we gain this punyam? Remember we had seen in prior classes how every action has two kinds of results. One that is drishta, what is seen, and one that is adrishta, what is unseen. So if your action is dharmic, for example, when you help somebody, the obvious seen result is that person is helped, and you may feel good about yourself, no harm about that. But what is the unseen result? For that good or kind dharmic action we've done, there is a pending unseen result. So that is called punyam. That pending unseen result is punyam. We can call it spiritual merit, and it can fructify any time in our life, this life, future lives, we don't know that. So dharmic activity, so why is punyam considered to be the seed for sukham? Is because it gives dharmic activities, this dharmic activities gives punyam, which can ultimately lead to favorable conditions in our life. And on the flip side, kutaha, from where is dukkham? Where do we get sorrow? How do we become, what is the cause of pain or sorrow? From papam, papa, papat, from adharma. So just as doing good activities, dharmic activities gives us punyam, doing adharmic activities increases our papam, our spiritual demerit, if that's a word. So if you deliberately hit somebody, the obvious drishta seen result is that that person has a bruise. And if you hit them bad enough, you might have a bruised hand as well. But because your action was adharmic, because it caused himsa, because it caused a little harm, there is an unseen adrishta phalam that is waiting, that is pending, and that is the papam. There is a story in the Padma Purana, and many of you might know the story of Chitragupta. Chitragupta is considered to be like the divine accountant in the heavenly world. So the story is, after Lord Brahmaji created the four varnas, Lord Yama went to him complaining, and he complained because he said, I am really tired of keeping all this account. Who did punyam? Who did papam? How much punyam, how much papam did they do? So Lord Yama goes to Brahmaji and complains and says, I really need some help here. I can't do it on my own. You know, imagine this is a really big task. So this is keeping the punyam and papam ledger, not only for humans, for humans, because humans are the ones who deliberately do action. You get punyam and papam only with a deliberate action, when there is intentionality. Animals don't get punyam and papam because they are programmed to be how they are. So Lord Yama goes and complains to Brahmaji. So Brahmaji, of course, goes into deep meditation, and it says 11,000 years. I don't know if it's in the life of Brahmaji. And then after his meditation is complete, from his body and mind emerge a radiant man who stands there with a pen and scribble. Of course, this is a modern version because I don't think they had pen and paper in those days. Anyway, the idea is this Chitragupta, the name comes because Gupta means secret, and Gup means to be quiet, and Chitra is a take on Chitta. Chitta means Brahmaji's consciousness. So they've just corrupted it a little bit and said Chitragupta. So this Chitragupta is thought to be the divine accountant. He keeps the ledger of the universe. And then when we all go to Lord Yama's court, Chitragupta is standing there as the minister of justice and says, okay, you get to go to heaven, you get to go to hell, you get this papam. Even in this life, you know, heaven and hell are extreme conditions, But you get some punishment, or you get some good for the papam you've committed. You get this punishment for the punyam you've committed. You get this reward. So how do we interpret this in our lives, and how is this useful? How can this be useful for us? So many times when we are going through difficulties and challenging situations in our life, we get overwhelmed. We get overwhelmed, and many times we question, why is it happening to me? I have been a good person all my life. How true is that anyway? How many of us have been a good person all our lives? We are all good people, fine, let's give us the benefit of the doubt, but we've also done adharmic actions, intentionally, knowingly, or maybe not. So when we go through some difficult times, really challenging times in our life, one way to think about it is that this is your, remember that unseen adrishtaphala for that papam you committed of hitting somebody? Maybe that is fructifying now. And that's how it helps to take any time you're going through a difficult period in your life, you can think of some papa, some unseen result is unfolding in our lives. Kasya aishwaryam, kasya aishwaryam, yakkila shankaram aradhayed bhaktya, yakkila shankaram aradhayed bhaktya. So kasya, for whom is there what? Aishwaryam. Aishwaryam means lordship or divine glory. In whose domain or with whose help is prosperity found? How do we prosper? Yaha, for the one who, kila indeed, aradhayet, who honors, worships, or propitiates, who respects who? Shankaram. Shankara is a name for Lord Shiva. Literally, Shankara comes from the root sham, to be, one meaning of which is to be quiet or calm, or to be appeased or pacified. So the one who worship Shankaram, how? Shankara, how? Bhaktya, with devotion. So one who worships Lord Shiva with devotion is thought to prosper. Obviously, we cannot take, we need to expand the definition of Shankaram here, of Lord Shiva. What if Lord Shiva is not your Ishta Devata, is not your chosen form deity to whom you worship? So any deity, any form, any practice of devotion to whichever form of deity, whichever form of God you worship, can lead to Aishwaryam, can lead to lordship or glory. And how does this bhakti or devotion lead to Aishwaryam? There is a verse in the Shivananda Lahari, which is a beautiful poem by written by Adi Shankaracharya, which explains how Aishwaryam is gained by a devotee. And it says, Karasthamalakavat vishataya apta Aishwarya Lakshmi gunaha. So karastha amalakavat. Amalakavat, just like the amala fruit, which is karastha, which is sitting on the palm. You could imagine an amala, any fruit sitting on the palm. It just sits there very effortlessly, right? You don't have to, unless you have some physical impairment that your hand can't hold the fruit. If you don't have that, any impairment, a fruit or amala fruit just sits on your hand easily. Vivashataya, without effort, without the presence of your will. Aishwarya Lakshmi Gunaha, the divine guna, the divine, the qualities of Lakshmi, of Goddess Lakshmi, Aishwarya, the prosperity and the qualities of Lakshmi. Again, Lakshmi can symbolize any god. Apta is gained. So with bhakti, it implies that with bhakti, with devotion, we can easily possess or gain this Aishwaryam, this glory, with no effort, just like that amala fruit that sits on our hand effortlessly. We do not need to beg we did not need to pray for glories. It just comes when we have devotion. I think we'll stop there because the next verse is a little long. So, so just the take-home message from today's classes, today's verses we saw. Puja and devotion, daily practice of, meditation. Daily practice of puja and meditation can help us discipline our bodies, senses and minds. And done with devotion. How do you get that devotion? The more you do it. How do you learn to ride a bike? How have you learned to navigate the computer or your phone? The more you do it, the more better you become. So that's the basic principle. Anything you do more of, you gain skill in, and you can become successful, be it the worldly sense or the spiritual sense. So before we end, I just have an announcement to make. So prior to a few months, we are going to begin resuming our once a month stotra class. So this stotra class, we take up a small stotra, shloka, or mantra. Not a shloka, usually it's a couple of verses. We learn the meaning of the stotra, we learn to recite it properly, and we end with a meditation using some aspect of the stotra. So this class meets once a month in student homes. So it's not going to meet here, and we're resuming that classes beginning next Saturday. On April 4th, we meet at 5 to 6:15, and it's followed by prasad in the student home. So this is a monthly class if you're interested, and it's a great class to develop, cultivate bhakti, because we don't do puja per se, but we're learning to chant, we're doing a meditation at every class, and we get prasad. So if you are interested in attending this class or hosting it, you can reach out to Pinky. I'll just request you to stand if you don't know who she is. You can reach out to her, share your email, and she'll put you on the mailing list for the class. And that class will meet next Saturday, 5 o'clock, not at the ashram, in whosoever home Pinky has, whoever has volunteered to offer their homes. And we'll end with our prayer. Om sarve bhavantu sukhinaha, sarve santu niramayaha, sarve bhadrani pashyantu, ma kaschid dukkha bhag bhavet, asato ma sadgamaya, tamaso ma jyotirgamaya, mrityor ma amritangamaya. Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurubhyo Namaha Harihi Om. Thank you all for coming.